Welcome to episode 2 of the Asia Franchise Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be speaking to John Richardson from the pet training franchise DogTech. Now, DogTech is a pet training system franchise that is for training and correcting behavior of dogs. So it's quite an interesting franchise, especially considering Asia is such a high growth market and many people in Asia love dogs. With franchises throughout Australia, New Zealand and Singapore, John has kindly joined us today to discuss his DogTech franchise system, training dogs and the opportunities it provides. I hope you enjoy this podcast. Thanks for joining us today, John.
Oh no, it's lovely to be with you and also your listeners, Nicholas.
You have written several books on dog training, including The Dog Whisperer and Whispers of Wisdom. And you're often referred to in the media as the Dog Whisperer. Could you start by telling us a bit about how you earned the nickname the Dog Whisperer?
Well, look, it really goes back to when I was growing up. I went out and bought a beautiful German Shepherd, and it wrecked my mother's house. So Mum said, "Hey, young man, get you and that dog down to some training, as otherwise I'm going to throw you out." She might have been serious about my doggy, but I don't think she was serious about me. But I actually joined my local club. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough, Nicholas, when I was a child going to school even, I used to ride horses, you know, to school and tie them up just across from where the school was. And so I always had very strong connections with animals. And later on, as I started, growing up and getting involved with dogs, as I said, went out and bought a puppy, wrecked Mum's house, so... As I said, Mum got me out to get some training, and I joined my local training club. And virtually that's where my training all started, and I became an instructor at their club and that type of thing. And then later on in life, I started my own company, which is DogTech, which we're now franchising. And when I'd go out to clients, right, going back quite a few years ago now, and I'd get their dogs under control so quickly for them because of the methods that I had developed. They said, "John, I think you've hypnotized my dog." And when the Horse Whisperer movie came out, mm-hmm. And the book, the Horse Whisperer, people, instead of saying I'd hypnotize their dogs, they'd say, "John, I think you're like that chap that whispers to the horses." They started calling me the Dog Whisperer. So that's how that came about.
Well, a lot of people in the cities of China, Hong Kong, Singapore and Japan live in small apartments. So just talking about sort of dog behavior in general, mm-hmm. How do you think that impacts on dogs living in small confined spaces?
Well, look, it does, but they seem to handle it well in Japan. I've done a lot of training and helping people, and we're represented in a small way in Japan. I've done training in Japan, and what you'll find is that what they do there is they manage it, or we teach them to manage it anyway, whereby that we get them to go and get a crate, so that they've got their dog under control, so that the dog's not all over the house all the time. And don't forget, dogs are a pack animal and they're a den animal. So they're used to living in a den. And even with my own doggy Whisper, as she was growing up, she's a pure Rottie with a tail, an American Rottie. As she was growing up, what I did is I had a crate for her. And she'd be in there, when it suited her and so forth. And geez, that worked out really well. So I introduced that in places like Japan, and so the dog would have somewhere where, especially if there were kitties and that sort of things, sometimes dogs like their own space, the same as we do. And we've allowed them with the to have a crate in places like small areas like Japan. The homes are very, very, very small. and as a lot of places in Asia are, in apartments and that sort of thing. And so with the crate, the dog's got somewhere we can retrieve into. You know, we can even have it sleeping there at night, etc. And in the daytime, if we want to give it like a nap in the daytime or that sort of thing, it can go in there and have a nap out of the way. It feels like that's its own place. And also what I've found with apartments, what you need to do also there is you need to make sure that if you've got only a small area, still give your dog some exercise by training it. And what I find is one of the best things is things like hide and seek. Let's say you've got two partners, mm-hmm. and one of them holds the doggy. The other goes and hides in a room or whatever, and they say, fine, 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 and they walk towards the person. And then when the dog finds the person that they've found gives them a little treat. And very, very, very quickly, the dogs get used to that, and they love it as a game. What I do with my little darling Whisper is I will hide a treat in the house somewhere. And I've taught her how to go and find the treat somewhere, and then I'll hide the treat somewhere else and say, find a treat. And she goes and gets it and so forth. And that's terrific. In small places, yes, you've got to give your dog something to stimulate their mind and keep them active. And then also give them out time. And that's why a crate comes in so handy.
Oh, great. So what types of issues are there for dog owners typically, and how do they benefit from, say, coaching?
Well, Nicholas, the thing is this, the list is huge, believe it or not. Mm. 70 to 80% of dogs in a home environment or in our world, let's say for argument's sake, have behavioural issues. Things like barking. Mm. All right, dogs will bark naturally, but the thing is this, what we call nuisance barking, that's no good and no value. If, for argument's sake, you have a dog that is barking all the time, the neighbours think, oh, my goodness, that dog's barking again. Why don't they, do something about it? And then, it could be a situation whereby there is an intruder coming, a person a robber or something coming to the house, and the dog barks, and the people next door just think the dog is nuisance barking, so they don't realise that there is some danger next door, something is happening. So there's no value having a dog for protection, for security, if that sort of thing is going on. So if a dog will only bark when strangers come around, then people know, even the owners know, oh, there must be something wrong. Bobby is barking, So barking's an issue with dogs if they're not trained. And then there's jumping. Dog will jump all over people and all that sort of thing. So you'll find that that's another issue that's very, very bad for people that have dogs. And the other thing is pulling. A huge amount of dogs that people have, and especially large dogs, because, they pull them up the road and that type of thing. A lot of dogs will pull people, and often a dog will go right through its life. People are trying to live in harmony with their dog. And it's pulling them up the road all the time. Well, that just doesn't work for the dog or for the person that has the dog. So this is where coaching comes in. This is where training comes in. And very, very, very quickly what we can do is we can stop the dog from doing what we call nuisance barking, And we also can stop the dog from pulling the people up the road and jumping all over them. And these are behavioural issues that we call, issues that can be cured, but they're nuisance issues. And take barking for argument's sake. Your dog's barking all the time. Well, usually what it is that we're spoiling our dog, we're telling our dog that it's the leader of our pack. And dogs see us as dogs. They don't see us as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And our family, for argument's sake, the dogs see that as their pack. They don't relate to, oh, this is the sister and this is the brother and the uncle and so forth. Excuse me. They don't relate to that. What they relate to is a pack mentality. So we have to be the leader of our pack, and that doesn't mean being harsh and hitting our dog or shouting at our dog. We just have to let the dog know that we are consistent with what we want it to do, and we have to let it know what we want it to do without us getting angry with the dog. So let's say it's barking, for argument's sake, the dog is barking. Okay. The dog will bark often because it sees us not as the leader of the pack. And the leader of the pack in their world, the way their mind is hardwired, okay, the way their mind is, the leader of the pack will do the barking and the protection of the pack. So if we're spoiling our dog the wrong way, we're telling our dog that it is the leader of our pack, and part of the dog's description, right, its work description, if it's the leader, it has to bark and protect, to protect the territory.
Right.
So that's often why a dog will bark. But a dog might also bark for nuisance reasons, like trying to get your attention. Let's say, for argument's sake, you put a dog outside or you put it in another room, and it comes and barks at that door and scratches at the door because it wants to get in, and it's barking and barking. It's saying to you virtually, let me in, let me in. You open the door, what have you done? You've compounded that behavior. You've reinforced that behavior. The dog knows I've got to bark to get in. So you're creating, you know, a problem with the dog. It's nuisance barking. It's the same with pulling. You go out for a walk with your dog and you let your dog pull you up the road. Well, what are you doing? You're teaching the dog, and it's the leader because it's leading. It's in front of you. Leaders lead.
Mm.
Jumping. A dog will often jump on people. What do? They put their hands on the dog, usually, and pat it, you know, because it's hit that height. It saves them bending down. We're reinforcing that behavior. And this is what coaching helps. It helps people understand what they should be doing and what they shouldn't, so they can live in harmony with their dog.
So it's almost more for the, as much for the owners as it is for the dogs.
Nicholas, you're spot on there. Exactly. It is more for the owner. You know, if you were going to ride a horse, for argument's sake, and let's say you wanted to educate the horse, really you've got to be the rider that knows what you're doing. A horse, for argument's sake, will know as soon as a novice rider gets on his back, and it will play up. It's the same with dogs. You know, if the owner of the dog, the doggy parent, does not know how to interact with the dog the right way, then the dog will see itself as superior, mm. And that means the dog is top dog as far as it's concerned, or very high up in the pecking order of the pack.
Right.
So then they will play up, you know. A dog that doesn't respect you, doesn't see you as leader of the pack, they won't respect you and they won't do what you want them to do. If I call my dog to me, Whisper, excuse me, if I call Whisper to me, Whisper will come to me because she's not frightened of coming to me. I've never shouted or smacked her for anything that she's done. If I call her to me and she comes to me, okay. I've never had to raise my voice to her at all, and she'll do anything that I wanted to do, as you can imagine. I actually had her on stage at 19 weeks of age. It just shows you. So, but it's the fact that I know that what I'm doing, and I pass that on to other people. That's what we do. We pass that on to other people so that they know how to interact with their dog, which is very, very, very important. So it's more the owner of the dog rather than the dog. The dog will follow the directions of the owner once they respect them. You ask your dog to come back to you, dog respects you, your dog will come back to you. You know, your dog will sit down for you if your dog respects you. Once it knows what you want it to do, it wants to please you. But you have to know how to give the directions. What do most people do? They say to their dog, sit, sit, sit. I told you to sit. Dog doesn't understand that, you know. One, it's too many words for a dog to understand because they don't have the command of our language. And dogs are mainly into body language. So they're trying to work things out from your body and also from your utterances as well, your talk. But dogs don't listen to pronunciation. I'm speaking to you and your listeners now, Nicholas, and I'm pronouncing my words. If I stop pronouncing my words, no one would understand what I am saying. Dogs don't listen to pronunciation. They listen to sound. So if you say to your dog, Bobby, come here. I've told you not to do that. It's too many words. Mm. That's when you're telling your dog to do something, you should say, sit, stay, down, one word, one syllable. Mm. So that's the thing about, coaching. Coaching is very, very, very important, and that's what we do with Dog Tech.
Now, just speaking about Dog Tech, could you tell us a bit more about the Dog Tech franchise system you have?
Yes, most certainly. We have we have people. We try to get mind-like people have a love for animals, and people that are willing to learn. Because people don't have the right attitude, they're not willing to learn, then a franchise is really not for them. But the beauty of a franchise is the fact that the people are in business; it's their own business, but they're not in business on their own. And this is why Dog Tech has been able to do what we do successfully, and we then pass it on to people. That want to get involved with us in a franchise situation. Now, what our people do is, and we have people from all walks of life, but what our franchise system is that we bring people in. We have a system for training dogs, okay, and we have a system for animal behavior as well, which is what we call. Animal behavior, which is positive reinforcement. It's no harsh methods whatsoever, and that's the type of system that we have. And what happens is that we bring people in, and once they come on board, once all the documentation is done and all that sort of thing, we put them through a very intensive training program. Which lasts for about a month, and then the training is ongoing all the time. We have managers in place, training managers in place to help keep people's training ability getting better and better. We also have a situation whereby we have a conference every year. And as we are going into other countries, we have conferences there. We also do a lot of training on Skype so that people can contact us at any time. And if they've got a behavioral issue that they're trying to work out with a client and something is not working, our franchisees contact us and we're available all the time. I will speak to a lot of our franchisees in the morning myself, mm-hmm. and if I'm not available, I have a general manager that looks after the inquiries from our franchisees, and if the general manager is not available, we have our training manager. So we have a lot of people in place to help our franchisees.
Right. And what types of people are well suited to running this type of franchise, have you found?
We have, Nicholas, we have people from all walks of life.
Right.
We have a barrister with us at the moment. His wife really loves dogs, okay? and he thought, well, you know, this would be great for her. And when he got involved himself with us, he found that he absolutely loved dogs himself. Okay, and he's always been an animal person, but dogs, you know, he never had much, interaction with dogs. But once he came on board with us and got involved with the dogs, he just fell in love with the dogs and the business and so forth. We've got a chap who was an electrician, and he is one of our best operators now. We just had to help him, you know, getting used to working with people and with dogs, at a different level that he was doing when he was, being an electrician, doing the electrical work. Mm-hmm. We've got some advertising people that have come on board with us. We've got somebody who was a professional soccer player. We have people from all walks of life. Oh, people that have been doing admin, you know?
Yeah.
Or also people, for argument's sake, where a couple want to run a little business together, and we find that that works very, very, very well also. And we find that this is a business that is suitable for not only the men but women as well. And I would say probably 60% of our franchisees are women.
Yeah. So how much is the level of investment, both in terms of, say, time and money, if you're looking at taking out a dog tech franchise?
Well, as silly as it seems, on our agreements we have that they must work at least 30 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
But look, our average people that are making very, very, very good money, they would probably invest something like about 40 hours a week, I would say thereabouts. And but it comes down to the person themselves, providing that the business is running along well, it's, you know, been effective, the clients have been looked after, that sort of thing. We are flexible with the hours situation, but I'd say that's about what they'd be looking at, something like about 40 hours a week approximately. Depending on the people themselves and so forth. But we have in our agreements 30 hours just so that it gives people just a bit of an idea of how low they can go as far as the hour situation is concerned. And as far as the investment situation, monetary investment, if somebody goes, for argument's sakes, and gets a, like let's say a franchise, and it was with an office involved or a store involved, a shop involved, or something like that. You know, they could be up $300,000, $400,000, something like that. Whereas all of our people work from home.
Yeah.
They have a desk at home, or they have a small room at home where they set up their computer and their, a desk where they can do some writing on and that sort of thing. So they operate from home. So the cost factor is down. They need a vehicle. So, you know, the vehicle usually that they have, does for them to start off with. Most of our people have bought little vans and they've done dog tech up all over them and so forth. But it's not mandatory. We don't say that you've got to go out and buy a new vehicle. So that whatever they have at the moment is suitable. One of our ladies in Queensland, she didn't have a car, but she went and bought herself a bike, and she had dog tech on the back of the bike, a little signed dog tech on the back of the bike. She was riding the bike around till she started getting money in and so forth, and then she got herself a car. She's a beautiful lady. That was the situation. But look, for the franchise in Australia, and that's all we can sort of say at this stage, because different countries, the dollars are different, the money's different and so forth, we're looking at $27,400. Mm-hmm. is the outlay. They have a royalty fee then It was very different in different countries. But it's about 10% of their turnover, let's say, around figures, and that's ongoing. As all franchise, most franchises, you know, have a royalty fee, and the ingoing franchise fee for a standard franchise is $37,400. That's the investment as far as that's concerned. As far as other equipment to run our business, we give people a startup kit where we give them leads and collars, the special ones that we have. They get DVDs that we have, that we've got our own DVDs. So we have CDs that people use for programs that we do with if dogs, for argument's sake, are playing up or upset with thunder and fireworks and that sort of thing. We have CDs, and they get all of that as their within their startup kit. So that's all part and parcel of that, and they don't have to pay any extra for that. So the major initial outlay is $37,400 for a franchise. That's in Australia, and in other countries it would be, you know, a similar type of situation. But however, dollars are different, so that would be have to be taken into consideration, Nicholas.
That's great. Could you provide an overview of a typical day for someone that would be a dog tech franchise owner?
All right. Well, look, it varies, as you can appreciate in anyone's life with their job, but the thing is this is that usually what our people will do is they'll start their day off by maybe making some phone calls to people that they couldn't have got hold of the day before, clients. Because we have a central number situation, and we've got a situation where we get into vets and pet stores, and that they usually are outlets. They let us, because we're very well known, the vets will get behind us, and the pet stores and that, they get right behind us, and we have marketing material in these outlets. And so inquiries come from those outlets to our general central number. And so they go directly to our franchisees. So they would have people to ring up that are inquiring about getting their dog trained. So what happens is that they may have not been able to get a hold of someone the day before, so they clear that up. They'll ring people and so forth, see if they can get a hold of them today, the day that we're talking about. They get that out of the way. That might take them an hour, you know, three quarters of an hour. Then our people book all their appointments themselves, so they've made it for a time that's convenient to them. Most of our people might make the first appointment at, say, 10:30, and the appointment will take maybe about an hour and a half to 2 hours. That's conducted in a client's home. Client knows we're coming, appointment's made, they know how much it's going to be, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So a client would then drive to our franchisee, rather would drive to the client's home, park the car, go in the home and do a presentation with the people, and do maybe a first session or a second session, whatever it may be. Our programs are usually two sessions. Sometimes we do go to a third. But usually two sessions, and as I said, we go to third with really, really difficult dogs. And usually we can get most behaviours, you know, out of the way by that. So let's say it was a first session, they would do a first session. That might take them an hour and a half to 2 hours. They then would come out of there, they'd go on to the next client, and so forth. So they may do three clients in the day. About halfway through that, they'd have lunch, they'd go and get themselves lunch, or if they take their own lunch with them, they'd have lunch. And they usually have maybe half an hour, whatever the case may be, that's up to them. So that would be their main day. They might get home 4 or 5 o'clock at night, whatever the case may be, that's up to them. They know they've done the work for the day. They might have on during the day they might have called in because they're over that way into maybe the vets. might have walked into the vets and saw how their flyers were going, and have a PR conversation with the vet or the pet store or whatever it is, and they may do three or four of those during the day if they've got the time that fits in with their appointments. They go home then. And they may have another hour that they'll call clients and booking them in for the next day and that sort of thing. And that might take them an hour there. And that's it. The paperwork is very, very minute. So they might do their paperwork once a week. They put a report in by Tuesday every week. And it's a very, very... Simple report whereby there's many things there of what they've done, and it's usually a tick situation. Or if they've done two appointments on one day, they just put a two. If they've done three, they put a three. Very, very, very basic. So there's not a lot of paperwork. There's not a lot of as far as equipment's concerned and that sort of thing. You know, they can virtually have a briefcase. Their training equipment in the briefcase. They've got their car. They've got the sign that we help them with. We send them the artwork and the sign and all that sort of thing. It's approved by DogTech, and they can then get it put on their car. That might cost them a couple hundred dollars or whatever the case may be. And virtually that's it. They're in business. You know, and they're virtually like a doctor almost. We go into a person's home, we've got our bag, we've got our equipment, we work with the client, we work with the dog. The people are having horrific problems that's causing great difficulty in life. We've seen almost partners break up because of the dog, you know. Mm. Wrecking the house or whatever, and we're able to help these people. And so at the end of the day, you know, you feel so tall and so great that you've been able, so satisfying it is to be able to help people who are in need and their dogs, and that's what we do. So that's virtually our day, you know.
Yeah. Now, looking forward, where would you like to see DogTech specifically in Asia in, say, 5 years' time?
Well, we're going to be the leaders, as simple as that. We have a very, very, very good product. We have a lot of infrastructure that we've built up over many, many years. You know, I've been training over 25 years myself and guiding our people for a long time now to learn more and to go ahead and leaps and bounds. And as far as we're concerned, there's really no operation that we know in Asia that's set up in a professional way by an organisation, to the extent that we are. And so we are moving into Asia now. We're making headways into Asia now, and we see ourselves being the number one training organisation in Asia, and that's what we're heading for.
That's great. Now, finally, so our listeners can learn more about your franchise, can you provide some links to your website?
Yes, most certainly. It's www. DogTech.com.au.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for your time, John.
No, thank you, and it's been a pleasure.
If you'd like to find out some more information about DogTech, you can also visit AsiaBusinessInvestor.com for a list of other franchises available in Asia and for general information about franchising opportunities in Asia and the Middle East. And that's goodbye from me.